Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. It is a free agency season podcast. This is usually one of the more fun episodes we do every year. Free agency in the NBA began on Monday. Things went crazy very quickly. The Milwaukee Bucks, maybe a little more relaxed than in the past. They are, after all, NBA champions, but still some big stuff to talk about. And to do it, got a special guest for you. Matt Velasquez. You know him formerly as the Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. He was on one of our more recent episodes as well. Jim Ozarski is on vacation, a well-earned vacation. The man went from covering the Packers pretty much to the end of the Packers season, right into the Bucks job, and then throughout a Bucks championship season, he's had, like, basically no time off in a year. He gets some. So we had to go the special guest route. Matt Velasquez, my understanding is you read like the CBA minutia, the salary cap machinations, that document where it's all contained. You read that stuff like other people read like John Grisham novels, right? I mean, this stuff is leisure reading for you. Is that correct?
I'll let you believe that. I don't know if it's true. I do know that I have had slightly more luxury tax and salary cap and all that kind of information than maybe your average Joe. So I'm just here to try and help sort things out as best I can. And there will be times where, since I'm not covering the Bucks anymore, I will admit I just don't know certain things. But hopefully I know more than I don't know, and we can fill in some gaps and process together and find some kind of communal catharsis. That's really the goal that we're going after here.
Before we get too deep into this, I will say this. This is the voice you're hearing now was recorded after this conversation. We talked about Patty Mills at the end of this as a good possibility for the Bucks, the Australian point guard, as a guy who could fit in under their mid-level exception, which we talk about. The Brooklyn Nets have signed him since, as we were having this conversation, the Brooklyn Nets brought in Patty Mills on that mid-level exception, that taxpayer exemption stipulation. So the Bucks missed out on a good opportunity there, but that's why you'll hear us talk about that at the end. You can basically just render that moot. The Milwaukee Bucks will not be getting Patty Mills. Bummer on that front. But let's get back to this. So, Matt, we've had you on the podcast recently. We had you in our playoff preview yeah. episode, along with Jim Ozarski and Charles Gardner. Since we last chatted, the Bucks, you know, they went on and won the 2021 NBA championship. And I know you were enjoying it from afar. But what's up with this? You leave the beat 1 year later. 1 year goes by after you've left the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and they go on and actually win the championship. What's going on there?
I mean, I think I was holding them back. I think all the questions that I asked and all the time I was around them, there's like it just took their focus away, and I apologize for that. But it was very fun for me as someone who, you know, I still work in sports. I have a job at Bleacher Report. It's an editing job. I'm not writing anymore. But as someone who no longer has to be unbiased in watching games and kind of reacting to games. I tweeted a thread right after the finals finished, like, of just all the people I was happy for. Like, I was just very happy for, you know, these were like my quote unquote coworkers, like colleagues, like, you know, working with, you know, people, you know, in the Bucks front office and, you know, the coaching staff, the players. Like, it just was nice to see them kind of have all their hard work pay off. And, you know, I feel like I get misty-eyed every year when a team wins a championship, just like whoever it is, like they are experiencing like a moment of like pure joy. And like, it's just nice to see moments of pure joy in a world where you don't experience that all the time. So, it was really nice and I enjoyed it and it was great. And I'm really happy for all of you Bucks fans out there and people in Milwaukee, because I'm sure the past few weeks have been just a rollicking good time. With all the, you know, the Deer District stuff and parades and all that. I mean, it's just what a time to be alive.
The two big topics we got to talk about are PJ Tucker and Bobby Portis. Those are the two. Obviously, those guys were on the Bucks last year. But kind of, I would say, two surprises. On the one hand, PJ Tucker, I think, is a player some Bucks fans thought would be back. He is not. He is headed to the Miami Heat on a 2-year deal. And then you've got Bobby Portis. I think most people thought he would be gone because the dude had a tremendous postseason, was a great story, came to Milwaukee, very, comes across as a very humble guy. He expressed sort of how much he loved the city and how much he wanted this opportunity and how he views himself as an underdog and sort of this blue-collar work ethic that has made him a superstar in Milwaukee, but he played so well and succeeded throughout the postseason, everyone just assumed he would go to get paid, right? Got the ring. Now he's going to go get paid somewhere else, somewhere that the Bucks simply wouldn't be able to afford what he would have been worth on the open market. And then come to find out he is coming back to Milwaukee, a 2-year, $9 million deal, player option on that second season. That's wild. That is wildly less money than one would assume Bobby Portis could have made on the open market. And so the Milwaukee Bucks essentially got a little bit of a coup. I have to think that caught you by surprise, too, when you heard the news that Bobby Portis was coming back.
I mean, that is a move that stands out not because of the dollars involved in the you know, kind of grossness of the contract, whatever it was. It's because he chose to stay somewhere and he turned down money. There's no question that Bobby Portis is worth more than 2 years and $9 million. Like, absolutely no question. Like, you know, he only got basically what the Bucks would give him without dipping into their mid-level exception, which is you know, basically 120% or 150%, whatever the percentage is, over his last year's salary, which was basically a prove it year. And he proved it. Like, he proved himself as being a player who is a critical piece of a championship team and a well-loved member of a fan base. Like, he proved everything you could prove. And instead of taking the payday, he said it again in his Twitter post, his Instagram post, like, he chose Milwaukee. He chose happiness. He chose being part of the culture that is, you know, that is in Milwaukee, that is in the Bucks organization. And, you know, I'm guessing there's probably an ability to opt out after that first year, like in the form of a player option. I don't know exactly what the contract looks like, but, you know, a 2-year, $9 million deal kind of screams like player option the second year. And that way he can decide, you know, if he wants to stick around again after next year, or if he wants to go ahead and get the payday that he's rightfully earned. You know, and in an era where obviously, you know, there's a lot of player empowerment and guys can choose what they do and where they go, it's not so common that players choose the lower money option. And, you know, because they've opened up so many avenues towards making so much money. I mean, Kelly Olynyk got like 3 years, $37 million. You think Bobby Portis is worse than Kelly Olynyk? Like, because I think he could get Kelly Olynyk money, you know, if the right team came around and wanted to offer it, right? He is valuable in that way. And he chose something different. And I just think it speaks to, you know, him and kind of what he values. I think it speaks to the Bucks organization and the way that they've, you know, brought him in, it made him feel included, made him feel used in an off the bench role. You know, the guy playing behind Giannis, it's hard to make that person happy, give that person, you know, enough minutes or time or opportunities. And they found that with Portis. You know, obviously he plays some of the 5-2 backing up Brook, but you know, there's not a ton of minutes there. You have entrenched starters, and they still found a way to maximize him and use him and make him happy and feel appreciated. And then, of course, you know, the city of Milwaukee and the fans of the Bucks. Like, you know, I can't remember a time when a player has been like this, like galvanizing to the Bucks fan base. Like, people go nuts for him. And like that never, you know, not that people don't go nuts for Giannis or for Chris or Ersan back in the day or like anybody like that. But this is like a whole nother level. Like, you know, just kind of a good situation, a fun situation. I think a situation where everyone involved feels valued and appreciated and loved. And like, that's just nice. And like, you hope at some point Bobby is able to be in a position to get his payday and get the money he's earned. But for now, like he said, he's choosing happiness. He's choosing where he feels appreciated and valued. And, you know, you can't put a dollar figure on that.
Yes, Sir Sanity is it was a wonderful time, but it wasn't quite what we saw with Bobby Portis. But
it's harder to chant Ersan than it is to chant Bobby. It just feels good to chant Bobby, Bobby,
Bobby.
It just feels different. Maybe it's the consonants, the B's, that just kind of like reverberate so well.
Yeah, you're totally right. So I wonder now, and we won't know this for a while, how much that changed with Bobby Portis coming back, if that changed the calculus with PJ Tucker, because I think a lot of people came into this thinking, well, Bobby Portis probably isn't going to be back. PJ Tucker might be 36, 37-year-old player at this point. He's obviously in the sort of the last stage of his career. He just won a title. He seemed very happy here. Love affair with Milwaukee as well. Was going out to bars after the championship parade. Was the subject of that amazing photo where he's downing champagne. That was sort of like the Mona Lisa of the Milwaukee Bucks the Milwaukee Bucks championship party. That picture is going to live forever, regardless of where Tucker plays. But his next stop is Miami. He signed a two-year deal. And this is where the salary cap stuff comes into play, because they did have bird rights with PJ Tucker, meaning they could pay him more money than the average team could pay him. But the Bucks are up against the luxury tax. They went into the luxury tax this past year when Jrue Holiday, the incentives in Jrue Holiday's contract put them over the top after they won the title. That essentially made them a luxury tax paying team. But to go back and be a luxury tax paying team again can be tricky. Financially is the big thing, but there's other considerations in there as well. And so all that stuff maybe played into the decision of PJ Tucker to wind up going elsewhere. He wrote a pretty cryptic Instagram post indicating that things happened quickly, that he, you know, in sort of intimating that he intended to come back, but circumstances changed beyond his control, and he wasn't able to get the money that he thought he was going to get, or wasn't able to get the opportunity he thought he was going to get. We don't know yet, but what we do know is it sounds like he was planning to come back, and he isn't. And money is, you know, the willingness to be in the luxury tax is being widely speculated as one of the reasons why he's not. That's concerning to people who fell in love with PJ Tucker. That's a guy who really helped unlock their ability to switch on defense in the postseason. A huge key to them beating that Brooklyn Nets team in that really tense 7-game series. If you're talking about a player older in his career, I think it's a little more understandable when a team is like, "Yeah, we gotta maybe move on." But this one is interesting, and you've already got Bucks fans fresh off a championship, like, starting to grumble a little bit. Why couldn't they find a way to bring back PJ Tucker? I don't know if your knowledge of sort of the cap will sort of shed some light on maybe what the reasoning is here, or what the problems would be to the Bucks re-signing him. But that's something that definitely sticks out right now to Bucks fans.
Yeah, it's just a tough situation. Like, I'm not gonna like apologize for billionaires not paying more money for a player. Like, I'm not gonna like stump for them. I don't think that's necessarily like what I'm gonna do. But you also have to consider, like, you know, do you want to pay the equivalent of like 30 or 40 million a year for PJ Tucker, right? Like, because that's the situation that the Bucks have put themselves in. Now, like, yes, it's because they won a championship. If they don't win the finals, Jrue Holiday's bonus doesn't kick in, and then they are not a tax-paying team last year, so maybe they're more willing to go further into the tax this year because they don't incur the repeater penalties. Like, those things add up real fast. And so, yes, you got the title. You know, that's part of his contract. That's how it works. You become a tax-paying team last year. Suddenly now you're already like, you know, life comes at you fast. Like, what, 2 weeks ago you won a championship, but now you're like facing repeater taxes for this coming year. And so you have to make that tough decision. And so I think that there's an understandable level of like discernment that needs to go on, you know, in order to be prudent with the way you allocate your resources. Again, not saying that, you know, billionaires shouldn't pay more money after they just made a ton of money, I'm sure, off of winning this championship, all the extra tickets that were bought and the sales that were made in terms of jerseys and t-shirts and whatever. Like, there's money coming in right now. Like, the Bucks owners are not hurting when it comes to Bucks revenue, as far as I would guess, right? But you need to be discerning. You need to understand, like, okay, here's how much money we have relative to the cap, and here's what we can do. You know, obviously Bobby Portis coming back for what they got him at, like, great deal, team friendly deal. Everybody's happy about that. You know, PJ Tucker, 2 years, $15 million, like, that's apparently the market rate. That's what he got. So if the Bucks wanted to bring him back, they would need to pay at least that, if not more, I would gather. You have to kind of beat the market, even if he wants to be there. I mean, not every player is going to take a discount to come play for your team. And so if the Bucks are paying him that much, you're talking about like significant, like I said, $30 million to $40 million per year when you include his contract and, you know, the tax penalties. So that's a lot. And like, you also still have to be able to figure out the rest of the roster, where like they have guys like Elijah Bryant and I think Sam Merrill. I'm pretty sure those guys are non-guaranteed right now. And I think they might have some slight partial guarantees. I don't think Elijah Bryant does, but like, you know, Diakite has, you know, a small guarantee. I think Sam Merrill will have some kind of small guarantee. You know, like, do those, do they keep all those guys? Do they keep some of those guys? Do they try and, you know, add more money to their back end on minimum contracts? Obviously, we've heard on Tuesday that Rodney Hood could be coming to the Bucks, and if he's coming, it's probably going to be on a minimum deal. We know Semi Ojeleye is going to be on a minimum deal. Like, are those guys in aggregate, like, going to make up for PJ Tucker? Having Dante DiVincenzo back for most of the season or some portion of the season, it make up for PJ Tucker at an already kind of sunk cost for DiVincenzo and a lower cost for the other guys? Like, I don't know. I don't know if that's the better way of going about things. You know, we'll see what happens. I would imagine that the Bucks are hoping that that's how it's going to work, that they can save a little money and also get that production. But the obvious risk is, if you're choosing to save money over, you know, kind of a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, right? Like, you had PJ Tucker, you know what he can do for you. You know that he helped just elevate your team to championship status, particularly with the way he defended Kevin Durant in the second round. Like, you know, guys like that don't just grow on trees, right? They're not everywhere. And so if you're kind of cheaping out and, you know, cheaping out to the tune of like 30 or 40 million or whatever it ends up being, it's, you know, cheap to them, not to us. But if you're choosing not to pay the money when you had the formula, you had the recipe for success, like, and things don't work out, like, that's on you. And like, that's going to look bad, and that's going to, you know, that's going to turn some fans against you and make them upset. Like, but, you know, if you frame it the other way and say, oh, we're being prudent with our money and making sure that we're retaining flexibility and still trying to build a good team, and say those, you know, additions actually help. You know, maybe the younger guys have more durability than maybe PJ Tucker did. You know, since he is getting older, he is 36 now, he'll turn 37 sometime during next year's playoffs. You know, maybe just all the mileage catches up to him at some point, and even Miami's like, ooh, but maybe we overpaid 2 years, $15 million. That might not be a good deal. Like, we just can't know all those things. And so, as is the case with most free agency decisions, we can say what we think now, whether, you know, we can dissect the process by which the decision was made, whether the process itself was good, but we won't know the results until later. You know, there have been all kinds of free agent decisions over the years. People are like, oh, that was great, and that was terrible over the course of time. And then suddenly, like last year, perfect example, Pat Connaughton. No one liked that contract when it happened. Like, there were like effectively zero people outside of the Connaughton family who liked that contract, like, when it happened. And the Bucks looked bad. You know, the number came out lower. There was an early reported number, and then it became higher. And it was like, that's not good. The process doesn't look good. That looks pretty shoddy. Like, can't believe they're paying that much money for Pat Connaughton, right? But Pat Connaughton this year, for all the belief and trust that the Bucks organization put into him, he was a very sound playoff contributor. Not to mention, like, his regular season production. Like, and so now his contract looks better, even though the process that by which it happened still doesn't really sit right. But the contract itself seems fine. Like, because, you know, if you can trade a couple million dollars for a Bucks championship, I'm sure most Bucks fans would do that. So like that, I think that's one example. Maybe people didn't like the Bobby Portis contract when it happened last year. I'm sure there are people who are like, ah, Bobby Portis, like, I don't know if he's the guy. Well, he's very much the guy. he's good. And like, you know, he's, you know, so like, there are some times where it works out like that. Other times you think someone has a great contract and you're like, oh, this is like a perfect deal, good numbers, good money, like, right time. And then it just, like, I mean, Greg Monroe, this is going back further, but like, the Bucks getting Greg Monroe was just like, oh my gosh, this is the best. A free agent picked us, like, good money, good years, good player. Didn't work out. Like, the process at that time was good. Like, did all the right things, wooed a free agent, like, paid market value, was willing to spend money to add talent. Didn't work out. Like, just not how it worked. So like, you know, we can kind of litigate all this stuff. But when it comes to PJ Tucker, like, time is going to tell. Right now, I don't think it feels good for a lot of people. It doesn't feel good when you have a guy who is that big of a contributor to a championship team, who just like fits the culture and the ethos of the team and the city that well. And you just say, well, it's going to cost too much. You know, we'll see it later. Like, Like, that's a bummer and that sucks and that's no fun. But, you know, in terms of the actual team success and how things work out, like, we're going to have to see. Like, could Semi Ojeleye, as a younger guy, a versatile defender, a guy we've seen defend Giannis fairly well in the playoffs in the past, you know, a guy who is cut, I don't want to say cut from the same cloth as PJ Tucker, but he's similarly shaped and he does some similar things. Like, you know, that could work out. Like, the danger here, and I tweeted about this with somebody yesterday on, you know, just going back and forth with some guy on Twitter. If you're listening, you know, shout out to you. But the worry here is we know that PJ Tucker is a 16 game player. He is a postseason player, year in, year out. You know, with the Rockets, you know, with the Bucks, you know, probably going back into his career even further. He's a guy who shows up, and you can play him in the playoffs in the biggest moments against the best teams, against the best players. Like, he works, he fits, he does his job. And he's gotten results. You know, sometimes, you know, regular season, he's had injuries and whatever, like, you know, getting older, you worry about like his mileage and all that, but come playoff time, he's going to be ready and he's going to put out, you know, a performance. Semi Ojeleye, he's been in the playoffs, hasn't always gotten minutes in the playoffs, hasn't always performed well in the playoffs, hasn't always been asked to do the same things that PJ Tucker's been asked to do in the playoffs. So, like, If he is kind of the de facto like replacement there, you know, obviously Dante DiVincenzo would start and take most of the PJ Tucker minutes. But if Semi is asked to do more, like, even if he is that guy, or if it's Rodney Hood or whatever, any of these new additions, are they 16 game players? Are they people you can count on in a playoff series at crunch time to defend the best players, to hit open shots, to be part of everything the Bucks do? Like, that's the question. And when you're trading off between a proven 16 game player and maybe a better fit 82 game player who's going to help you get to the playoffs, like, that can be a tough pill to swallow too, because the whole point, as we've seen for years, you know, these are no longer the get to the playoffs to be happy about it Bucks. Like, you get to the playoffs now, that is a foregone conclusion. You have Giannis, you have the two-time MVP, the finals MVP, you know, still very much in his prime. The question is not playoffs. The question is, how far can you get? You know, and even the moments after they won a championship, he was already saying, let's do it again. Like, he is a psychopath when it comes to his competitiveness. He wants to keep going and succeeding and all that stuff. So you need to keep, you know, surrounding him with the best possible team. And, you know, the Bucks are taking a significant risk by, you know, spending less money into the tax to, you know, bring back other guys who are not PJ Tucker. That is a significant risk. And, you know, we're going to have to see how it plays out. And we're also going to have to see how it is kind of viewed by other players. We're like, you know, do you want to go to the Bucks if that's how they're going to treat you, that you might be expendable? And like, yes, they are still going to pay the taxes here. This is not to like try and eschew the tax or like avoid the tax. They are going to be a tax paying team this year. They have already like made that bet. They paid Giannis. They paid Chris. They paid Brooke. You know, they've paid guys. It's not that they haven't paid guys, but they've paid enough guys that they're going to be in the tax. They paid Drew, obviously. Like, they're going to be in the tax. And so, like, on one hand, like, yes, like, they are showing they're willing to pay the tax because they're going to be paying it again. They paid it last year. They're paying it this year. But what kind of message does it send to players who say, oh, well, if I go there and I prove myself, unless I do the Bobby Portis and give them a super team friendly deal, I'm going to be expendable.
Which is why I wonder too, if this is more as much, I should say, about the money as it is about the fits, the wrong word. We know he fits, but he's getting up there. You know, maybe the calculus is, well, we've kind of gotten every drop out of the orange we could get, you know, like, we squeezed it out of him. He was incredible, but how much longer can he do that? And then, you know, you go out there, get a couple guys on minimum deals because they're now an attractive destination for guys who are willing to take minimum deals, Rodney Hood and Semi Ojeleye being the new additions. And then you also have that MLE to consider, the mid-level exception. And this is where I'm going to lean on your expertise a little bit. My understanding is that primarily the issue with bringing Tucker back is financial, what you're talking about. But, you know, if you go into that tax apron, which is the next level above the luxury tax, now you start losing your ability to use some of these exceptions, or the exception dollar amounts go down where you wouldn't be able to pay the same amount. With that MLE still out there, it seems that the Bucks would still be in position to sign one more person. Now, obviously, the first wave of free agency is over, so I don't know who that person would be. Thought maybe, I mean, you're in Indianapolis, so you know a little bit about Victor Oladipo. He's a guy with a serious injury history at this point, but that could be somebody, I guess, that the Bucks would be chasing after. But I don't know if the MLE is in jeopardy if they bring a guy like Tucker back, or what the consequences would be that don't have to do strictly with dollar amount paid by the ownership team. So maybe give me some insight into that. And then also, I mean, Oladipo, that's a name. Is that a crazy consideration, or a player like him who, you know, might, we maybe aren't talking about yet, but should be? I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's hard to figure out exactly what the best course is, because you're right. Like, they don't have too many options right now. They have the taxpayer mid-level exception, which they can use on one or multiple players, but that's only like $5.9 million. They have a couple trade exceptions, like a $1.6 million one, a $4.8 million one. Like, there's not a ton of avenues there. They really need to figure out who they want on the team, because they have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys under guaranteed contracts. Then you add in Portis, Ogilvy, and Hood. That's 10. Of the non-guaranteed or partially guaranteed guys, you're talking about Elijah Bryant, Mamadi Diakite, Sam Merrill. Those are, you know, so that if you keep all of them, up to 13 already. And we're not even considering their two draft picks. Mamu Kalashvili, and I haven't researched the Greek guy. I don't even know what his name is.
You just casually drop Mamu's name and then you just move on. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't know the other guy's name. I'm sorry, what did you say?
That's the perk of having covered Marquette and the Big East. So you've run into Mamu at some point. But yeah, so there's him. I'm assuming they'll have him on the team. I assume the guy from Greece is probably a stash guy that they'll keep somewhere else. The 60th pick, you know, isn't always a guy who you keep on your active roster. Maybe two way, maybe you stash him in Europe, whatever. So like, how do they navigate those players? But they still should have some space. Like, do they bring Thanasis back? Mm. Like,
whoa.
I mean, he's not under contract. Like, he is a free agent. So like, this reminds me of when
to go back to Marquette, when Henry Ellenson came to Marquette and then Wally Ellenson was on scholarship, and suddenly Henry went to the NBA and Wally didn't have a scholarship anymore.
Yeah, that was not a good time. That was a weird time to cover Marquette. I will leave it at that. But you know, like, the Bucks have all these guys who they have to decide, like, who fits, who stays, you know, where do they go, how do they, whatever. But they do have some space on that, you know, that mid-level exception. They don't necessarily have to use it. They don't, I mean, if you can get players for the minimum instead of having to pay them any amount more than that and use your MLE, like, cool. Like, as long as it's the same guy who you're trying to get, you know, I think Victor Oladipo could be an interesting option. I don't know what his value around the league is. I don't know how much higher than the minimum that it is. I mean, he's going to be someone who, wherever he goes, he's working on just like absolutely like rebuilding his value and proving that he can stay on the court first and foremost, and secondly, that he could be at an all-star level. So if you can take a flyer on an Oladipo type, like, I don't see too many downsides. It's just a function of like, who is he replacing on your bench? Like, would you rather have him or like Elijah Bryant? And I'm assuming you'd rather have Victor Oladipo. And then how much are you paying him? Like, do you want to use your full taxpayer MLE on Victor Oladipo? Probably not. Like, I don't think $5 million for like a 1 year, or, you know, $11 million for 2 years is really like the right value right now for a reclamation project. Plus, obviously, everything you do is compounding your tax bill to some extent. So you need to figure out who fits and how much. I assume the Bucks will go into the season. I don't know who the guys will be, but I would guess they're going to want to be around 14 guys on their active roster, with room to potentially add a buyout guy later in the season. You want to have the flexibility to do that without having to cut somebody, unless you can sign somebody to a non-guaranteed deal that would give you the flexibility to kind of cut them off right there, have them for the first part of the year, and then waive them in order to pick somebody up off the waiver wire in buyout season. But it's still very early in free agency, so it'll be interesting to see how the Bucks try to handle all of that. Because you're right, like there aren't as many guys around. They don't have as many holes to fill. I mean, their starting lineup is set. Like as long as Dante's coming back, like they've got their lineup set. They have their kind of like solid backups in Bobby Portis, Pat Connaughton, I guess apparently Ojale and Hood. They could definitely use some more help at the point guard position, unless they're trying to convert like a Sam Merrill into a backup point guard, or just, you know, use like a point guard by committee, you know, with guys who are non-point guards, like shifting Dante over to run point, or, you know, or Pat or whatever, when you talk about the second unit. So I'm not sure exactly how they're going to handle that. Obviously they still have Jordan Wara, who showed some pretty good stuff in the Olympics. He might be able to get some more run this year. But I think there is room for them to add a point guard type guy. I just don't know exactly who that would be yet, but it's going to have to be somebody on a fairly low contract.
Yeah, right now Drew Holiday is playing every minute of the 2021 NBA season, unless they can add somebody to do that. I mean, Dante's handled the ball before, and you know, you mentioned Dante. That's sort of a thing to remember too. If they're healthy, PJ Tucker is not even a starter on this team. Obviously, Portis isn't either, but it is important to remember that Tucker moved into a more prominent role because Dante was out. It's hard to really picture how that Nets series or any of the series thereafter go if PJ Tucker isn't forced into that role. So you briefly mentioned the Connaughton contract, and I kind of want to rewind a little bit. I said this on a previous podcast, but once you win a title, every decision the GM made that year is a good one. So the Connaughton thing, yeah, it worked out. The Bogdan Bogdanović deal, doesn't matter, it worked out. Whatever it was, it worked out for the better because they won the whole thing. But John Horst has taken some criticism the last couple years. It was the Connaughton deal last year where, like you said, it was reported as a two-year deal. They had to go back and make it a three-year deal because it didn't fit under the various parameters of the exceptions they were using and the roster construction they were making. So it looked like they basically, you know, clerically errored their way into giving him another year. Before that, it was the Malcolm Brogdon situation where he took some heat for not making use of a trade exception that if he had done things just slightly differently, they could have made use of. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know exactly if that's a fair criticism or if, like, over time it sort of revealed itself to be not that big a deal, or, you know, if they screwed something up. Yeah, I don't imagine the same thing is applying here, that it's some sort of miscalculation with Portis signing that maybe led to the PJ Tucker situation. I don't know, but can you just sort of rewind, like, what was it about those situations that John Horst sort of caught some flack for, and did it turn out to be maybe a thing, maybe a real thing, or just something people were overreacting to in the moment?
No, I mean, I think they're both legitimate. I think you pretty much encapsulated it. Like with Brogdon, there was the trade exception they could have potentially taken advantage of, and they didn't. And that could have, you know, helped them, you know, make the money work. Yeah, even if they're going to trade him just to use it to make the trade exception and all that, it's still a little foggy to me. But like that's the gist of it, is that there was a trade exception that they didn't take full advantage of. They could have helped them on the margins, and they didn't do it. And then the other one was Connaughton, where, yeah, it was originally reported as a 2-year deal, a little bit smaller, but it wasn't going to work that way. And so suddenly, in order to convince him for a third year, which is a player option, it's not even a team option, it's a player option, they had to up the money and kind of make that work. And so they had kind of had egg on their face. I mean, they faced with the Bogdan Bogdanović thing where, you know, like who knows? I mean, I don't think we've ever still discerned exactly what went down there, but suddenly Woj has it and he's tweeting it and it's 3 days ahead of free agency and it looks bad. Like, you know, a lot of Bucks fans, I still see them like, you know, free agency opened on Monday and the deals were coming out left and right at the beginning. It's like, oh, well, no one tampered. Like only the Bucks get in trouble for that. It's like, yeah, well, only the Bucks, like, and the Kings in that situation were tied to a deal that was like, you know, supposedly done 3 days before like free agency happened. I promise you, if any team like back last Friday, it said, oh, like, you know, the Lonzo Ball sign and trade to the Bulls is done. Like the NBA would have been pissed. Like they would have to come down on it because it's that flagrant. Like when it's flagrant like that, you have to come down on it. When it's 6:01 or whatever the time was that the free agency opened and deals are coming out, it's like, well, now they're being announced, like whatever. Like that's fine. So, but that whole Bogdanovich thing looked bad, cost the team some money, like, you know, ended up making it so that they were worse and maybe they got played. Like maybe Bogdanovich's camp like did say, yeah, we're going to do this. Like, let's do this. But then they just turned around and said, oh, actually the Hawks are going to, you know, send us this offer sheet. It's going to be this much higher. Then forget it.
That, by the way, like, is the scenario I'm operating under.
But we're like, they could have used the Bucks as leverage and say, hey, we're just going to do this. And we're going to get like this amount of money, which would have been less than what Bogdanovich got in Atlanta. But even still, if you were used as leverage and played on a public scale like that, like, that also looks terrible for you. Like neither of these situations is better. All of them look bad. And so like the only, like you said, the only thing that makes it look better is the Bucks did get Drew Holiday. They were able to keep DiVincenzo as opposed to trading him for Bogdanovich. He had a good year until he got hurt. And the rest of their deals that they made worked out well enough to help them win a championship. So all of it works out almost better. But, you know, of course, there's the proverbial, if Kevin Durant's foot was a little bit shorter, or if Giannis isn't able to come back in the finals, or all these ifs, like, then the deals don't look as good. And, like, so, like, that's why you can try and look at the process. And there have been times where the Bucks process has looked really good. And guys, they've been able to identify and get on reasonable contracts. Obviously, the Brook Lopez contract will never be topped. In terms of getting somebody at a great deal who like helps really just like change your team's identity and becomes like the best version of himself while like on a really small contract, and you're able to bring him back and solidify that, like, really good deal. Bobby Portis, good deal. Like, good deal last year, good deal this year. You know, getting PJ Tucker when they did for the trade they did, good deal. Like, you know, there have been a whole bunch of good deals that the Bucks have made. But they've also messed up on the margins sometimes. And I think it's okay to say that. I think it's fair to say that. I think being able to question a process and how it works, even if it does work out, is a good thing. And so, you know, I'm not privy to all the information that John Horst has and why he does the things that he does, or why ownership opts for, you know, certain money savings or money expenditures that they opt for. But I think it's totally fair for journalists and fans to question those things and to wonder like what goes into those decisions and why are we seeing things that either you're not seeing or choosing not to see or seeing and not going with. And so I think that's, you know, totally reasonable.
What else do you, so you mentioned Semi Ojeleye a little bit. As the thing I know about him is he was one of a handful of people who were initially brought up as a possible Giannis stopper. We have seen that there's no true Giannis stopper, but, you know, especially with Brooklyn signing James Johnson, supposedly to do the same sort of thing. What do you know about Ojeleye otherwise? And same with Rodney Hood, who is reportedly on his way to Milwaukee as well. Anything about those guys jump off the page at all?
I mean, Semi can guard multiple positions. He's never been asked to play a lot of big minutes. He hasn't actually played a ton of like playoff minutes ever since that 2017-18 season, like when he averaged like 13, 14 minutes a game in the playoffs. Like since then, like he's been seldom used, and that's kind of, you know, partially due to the different changes to the Celtics and their, you know, their roster and what they need and all this stuff. But like, I don't know, he's just kind of like there. Like he's kind of fine. I feel like he's kind of, I don't want to say he's like kind of like DJ Wilson, because I think maybe he's a little bit better, but he's like the kind of guy who like you know that there's potential, but you're just trying to figure out how to get it out. And like, you know, and what team and what situation is like the best for him. And maybe being in a different team and being asked to play a different role with the Bucks, like maybe that'll be better for him. Like maybe that'll work. And maybe he'll just be a guy who plays in the regular season and we never see him in the playoffs. Like, I don't know. Like, on paper, he seems like a guy who could fit. Like, he's, I think he's like, what, like 6'6", So yeah, he's 6 foot six, like 240, like versatile, can defend multiple positions, shoots about 35, 36% from three. And over the course of his career, not on super high volume, but on decent volume, like, you know, considering the minutes that he plays, which are fairly low, like, but this Bucks team isn't super duper deep. And during the regular season, they're going to need guys to come out and play. And, you know, so he'll have time within Bud's offense and within the defense to figure out, okay, how, where do I fit? What do I need to do? What are my roles? And like, you know, the Bucks kind of taking a flyer to see like what he can be. Cause again, on paper, 6 foot six, 240, versatile, can shoot threes. I feel like that reminds us of some people who have, you know, performed well for the Bucks. So like that's an option. Like it may pan out, it may not. Like it's just you know, a function of how he's used and how he adapts to how he's used. And then Rodney Hood, like I know he had a really good playoffs a couple years ago that really like kind of jumped off the page, and he was great for that Portland team. You know, but that, again, that playoff performance might, I mean, that was like 2 years ago. Like that's not even recent. I mean, I guess it's somewhat recent, but it's a long time ago. And even then he only averaged like 9.9 points per game over the course of the whole playoffs. But there were a few series that he was really good. He didn't do much of anything this year. And he's another one of those kind of like reclamation projects where it's like, well, like, what is he and what can he be? Can he be what he's been in the past, in a smaller role off the bench? Like, how can he fit? You know, he's 6 foot eight. I mean, the Bucks have needed more backup wings who are solid for years. I mean, there's been kind of like a lack of wings. They've either had point guards or bigs and like not a ton of, I'm thinking back to like, you know, when they had like Pat Connaughton, Sterling Brown, and like George Hill, like all those guys a couple of years ago, like they had a bunch of like guards and like smaller wings. They didn't have bigger wings. And so you, if you're the Bucks, I think you're hoping that he can be kind of like that second team backup to like Chris Middleton and give you maybe a little bit of microwave scoring off the bench and, you know, play solid defense and make some shots. But, you know, it's hard to know exactly what, I mean, he's only like 28. He's going to be 29 during the season. Like, not that he's like old, but he's not new. He's not young. So like, what does he have? What can he bring in kind of a smaller role? And if it's, and as long as it's for the minimum, we haven't at this point gotten clarity whether he's in for the minimum or in for a piece of the MLE. You know, for the minimum, it's okay. Like, what can he do? What can he bring? Here's a solid, you know, veteran guy who is not going to, I don't think anyone's super excited about getting Rodney Hood. And if you are, like, awesome. But I can't imagine there are a ton of people who are like, oh yeah, Rodney Hood, like this is the guy the Bucks needed to bring in free agency. But he's just a guy. He's a piece who, if he plays to his potential, can be a solid backup guy, and on that second team. And if he's not, then at least he's not on a bigger contract. Like they took a flyer.
Definitely gut reaction. You think the Bucks add one more piece? You think that there's still one more signing out there?
I think so. I don't know who it is. You know, because they could take their two draft picks and make them both their two-way guys. Like, and they can move on from the two-way guys that they have. You know, Axel Toupin and Justin Jackson. They can get off those guys in the two ways, replace them with the new younger guys. I mean, both the guys who are on two ways now are older, kind of, you know, more solidified NBA players than obviously the rookies. But last year was different in that you could carry your two-way guys like the whole time. So maybe you wanted more proven, more settled players in those two-way roles. And now they can potentially get back to a more developmental roster spot if the G League can get back going, you know, back up to full speed, and you're not going to be having those guys around all the time and potentially relying on them to kind of fill out your roster. You know, who knows what's going to happen with COVID and the Delta variant and, you know, people being able to get vaccinated or not be vaccinated, or, you know, if we can have in-person events in perpetuity now, we're back or we're good or we're not. Like, no one knows. So, you know, if they're able to use those two-way spots on their kind of lower draft picks, fill those spots in, then you're not taking up active roster spaces, so you have more space to get some guys. And if that's the case, like, they need to fill those roster spots. Like, you can't carry, you have to have at least 13 guys, and you don't want to be carrying 13. There are rules about minimum roster sizes, like, you know, over multiple years. You have to have an average of like 14 or whatever it is over a certain year span. And so you're going to need to fill those. And so I think that there's still at least one signing, maybe two in the offing. Like I said, we'll see what they do with Thanasis. And we'll have to see, you know, if they use the mid-level exception, if they can convince a guy. I mean, I know a name that has been thrown out a lot is Patty Mills, for a lot of teams. I mean, basically I don't know at this point if he's been signed to anyone. Obviously he's in the Olympics right now, and about to play Team USA, as far as I know. So I don't know if that's front of mind for him. And obviously he has an agent who'll be working on that stuff, you know, on his behalf, but like, I think he also has to like sign off on it and pay attention to it. And it is his life. So like, that's a guy who is definitely worth more than the taxpayer mid-level exception. Like, there's no question about that. Even at, you know, at his age and with his mileage and all that, he's still worth more than that. Someone on the open market would pay him more than $6 million, for a season. But if the Bucks, with their championship culture, with Coach Bud, who obviously knows him, you know, if they could convince him to come and be their backup, at the taxpayer MLE, like, that'd be a coup. Like, suddenly this offseason, even with losing PJ Tucker, like, looks different. And like, you can argue better, you could argue worse, but you could at least say, like, hey, like, they brought in like a high quality NBA point guard, to be Drew Holiday's backup, who can play the off guard, or Drew can play the off guard if they wanted to play him together. I mean, you have different options there. Yeah, so I mean, we're on day two. Like, there's so many more things that can happen. Try not to make snap judgments on, oh, or was free agency a win or a loss for the Bucks or for whatever team after day one. So, well, I don't know. Like, not everything is settled. And once the dust does settle, then you can kind of make an off-season judgment. Okay, what does this off-season look like? Does it look good? Does it feel right? Or did they miss opportunities? And, you know, I think no matter what happens, I think a lot of people will view losing PJ Tucker as a missed opportunity and a misfire. And I think that's totally fair, based on what he's brought. But we still don't know what the roster is going to look like. There's still fun to be had, I think.
Well, Matt Velasquez, I very much appreciate you hanging out with us. This is a good time, little get the band back together sort of thing on the Point Forward podcast. We will we'll have to do this again, right?
Yeah, no, I'm fairly open. I'm not as well versed as I'm sure Jim would be right now, since he'd have to be like in the thick of it, and I'm very much on the outside looking in now. But I'm happy to share whatever knowledge I've retained and insights I have, and hang out with you, JR.
Matt, thank you so much. I can't thank you enough, man. We're always always missing you a little bit, even though Jim did a great job this past season. Ben Steele, Lori Nickel covering the Bucks championship run. It is a bummer that you did not get to join in on the fun, but I know you were enjoying it from afar. So thanks for hanging out here. We will chat with you again very soon.
All right, great. Thanks for having me.
Find us on our regularly scheduled program with Jim Ozarski at Stitcher, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review, and we will chat with you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.